Welcome to Aim Higher, a show designed to help us realize the leadership potential inside of all of us. I'm Skip Pritchard, CEO, author, blogger, student of success, and your host. Scott McCain is an expert on distinction, on differentiation, on customer service, on marketing, on sales, on a lot of things. And he's a very good friend. He's a speaker's Hall of Fame, Sales and Marketing Hall of Fame, Skip Pritchard Hall of Fame, because he has been here multiple times. And he has a great new book out. Of course, he has great books out, Taxi-tary and Create Distinction and All Businesses Show Business, What Customers Really Want, and on and on. But, and of course, Iconic. I can't forget Iconic, because that's iconic. But the newest one is, the newest one's always the best one.
Yeah,
so exactly. The newest and best one is The Ultimate Customer Experience. And I encourage you to get this great book. So, Scott, welcome back.
Thanks, Skip. Good grief. I need to write more books so we can get together more often.
Exactly.
I love this. It's good. It's great.
That's it. Yes. Is that why you don't write books every year? Like, I do not want to see it.
I don't have that much to say.
I do not want to see it. So, you know, Scott, for those people who may be unfamiliar with your work, I'm curious about you just telling us, how did you even get onto this path of talking about distinction?
I went through a challenge in my life, Skip, as you know. I lost my wife to cancer. I was broke. And then I found out that I was trying to get back in the swing of things with my writing and my speaking business. And I realized it's really tough. When I first started, there weren't that many folks that were doing speaking engagements and writing business books. And now I had to jump into a very hyper-competitive marketplace. So just for myself, I started researching, how do you stand out? What does it take to be chosen, to be selected? And, you know, blinding flash of the obvious, gosh, if I was looking for that in my little business, what's the likelihood that others are? And I found some kind of counterintuitive things about what it takes to stand out in the marketplace. But one that certainly isn't counterintuitive is that every customer, regardless of whether it's B2B or B2C, wants a great experience at the places where they do business.
They really do. And Scott, I think about the importance of creating distinction. And while we think about it, you think, oh yeah, I want to be unique. I want to stand out. Most businesses actually seem to work really hard to just fit in, to just be part of, you know, the same experience that you would get here, or they compare themselves to who's across town. Why is it that people aren't thinking always about distinction? And what have you seen as you're working on this with companies of, we need to be different? Are they receptive to that? Do some see that, or some just not care?
That's a great question, because I think so much of it depends on leadership. You know, if the leaders are willing to make that step, and I'm talking about a leader, whether it's a big company or whether it's an entrepreneur with a small business, if they are willing to do the things it takes to stand out, then you see that filtering throughout the entire organization. But in Australia, they call it the tall poppy syndrome. That's the one that gets chopped off first. And a lot of us are really afraid. I use the example of dry cleaners. You know, you got two dry cleaners a couple blocks from each other, and one puts a sign, shirts $1.99. Well, what the typical other dry cleaners will do is put a sign in their window saying shirts $1.89, and it's a race to the bottom. Instead, what if they said, we're eco-friendly, or we have greater care for shirts, or 24 hours, or we deliver? Or what if they found another way to compete, yet we are in this mindset of we're going to compete against the others in our industry rather than we are working to create distinction for customers so that we get chosen instead of our competitor?
How about not having the buttons pop off?
Right. Your buttons won't be broken. Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's talk for a moment. You talk a lot about customer service and sales and those kind of things. How does customer service contribute to a company's differentiation?
Oh, it's everything. Many organizations are stuck in thinking of the past. I remember many years ago when I started in this business, part of what I also did was do sales training seminars for another company. So I would take their content and deliver it on their behalf. And one of the lines back then was, service is the first step of the next sale. Well, no, not anymore. You've got to have it from the first contact, from the initial impression that you make before the sale is made. And a lot of organizations are stuck in that, we'll do what it takes just to keep people happy. Or it's, you know, this is one of my pet peeves, Skip. They do customer satisfaction studies. And that drives me crazy. When I got down on one bended knee to propose to Tammy if she would have said, yeah, I'm guess I'm satisfied. I mean, that's not what you want. You want them to be overwhelmed and to be thrilled. And so why do we accept mere satisfaction from customers? Satisfaction means you didn't mess up. I might give you a chance next time. Why don't we measure higher levels of customer engagement, of customer, if they're thrilled, instead of mere satisfaction?
Makes all the difference in the world. And of course, now we are bombarded with so many surveys and so many things, and or pressured. Yes. I know of the car dealership I go to, pressure.
Yes.
To, if you don't give me a super outstanding, amazing rating with perfect, and if you mention one thing, I don't get my bonus, and here's my kids. And
it's so true.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, this is all fine, but the company is not actually getting truthful experience stories, which is not really about what you're looking for.
And if you were giving me that level of experience, you wouldn't have to beg me for that number, right? I mean, it runs counter to what customers are really looking for, whether it's B2B or B2C in today's marketplace.
So true. Well, Scott, previously we did a whole interview on creating distinction.
Yep.
And you had four ways to create distinction. And I encourage people to watch that and to read your book on Create Distinction, because I literally quote it all the time. I always say, Scott says there are four things, and I share it.
Thank you.
Because it's a simple way to reflect on your business, reflect on who you are, and create distinction. But then you took it to a whole new level. And so I encourage people to get into that and go back to that interview. But you took it to a whole new level with iconic.
Thank you.
And what's the difference between distinction and being iconic? And does everybody want to do that?
I would hope they would, but no, I don't think they're willing to do what it takes to get there. But the fundamental difference is this. Distinction means that you are the go-to in your industry. So to use the dry cleaners, oh man, this Jane's Dry Cleaners is the one to go to. They are the best dry cleaners in town. They stand out from all the rest. Iconic is that other businesses are saying, we should run our business. We should run our restaurant. We should run our car repair shop the way that Jane runs her dry cleaners. It transcends your particular industry. You set such a high bar that you become an example for other businesses, for other industries to follow, because you are so amazing and so outstanding at what you do. St. Elmo Restaurant in Indianapolis is one that I use as a frequent example. Everybody talks about Apple and Starbucks and, you know, all those. But St. Elmo's Restaurant in Indianapolis is amazing. Higher revenue than Tavern on the Green in New York City, and their steakhouse in Indianapolis. How do you get there? You not only create distinction, there's things about what you do that attract you more than other steakhouses, but you run the business, and the way you treat your team and the way that you treat your customers is so extraordinary that other businesses in that community go, how do we copy what they're doing so we can have the employee retention, the customer loyalty, all of those things that you find in something outside our industry?
So the difference between distinction and iconic, and as you become known, is there a target on your back more when you're iconic?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And
sure.
That's okay.
Yeah. But the other thing was, in a couple examples, I talk about Fairmont Hotels and the work I did there. And I was having breakfast with Jack Miller, who's the CEO of the Fairmont Scottsdale Princess. And he said, you wrote a book on how we create distinction, and we've been through this process and we've done it here. Now, how do we keep it? I thought, well, I wrote a book on how you get it, but I didn't write a book on how you keep it, or if you've lost it, how do you get it back? And he said, and what's beyond distinction? And I really had not thought of that. And he laughed and sat back, and I'll never forget. He said, so next our goal is to be iconic. And it was like the light bulb went off. That
set you on the path.
That set me on the path.
That's great.
And people will set you on the path if you're willing as an author to listen. People will set you on the right path. And by the way, you are one of two people that did that for me with this book.
Well, people are always setting me on a path. I don't know. I don't know if I want to go on the path.
You told me where to go, and I went
yeah,
there.
Exactly. Okay, so. I don't know about that. You know, how do leaders create distinction on this way to being iconic without being gimmicky, mm-hmm. without being inauthentic? Because I think some people try to, oh, what are they doing across town? Oh, they're putting this little fluffy toy in the bag, and I'm going to do that. Like, how do you do it without being gimmicky so that it's authentic and it really fits the brand? How do you know if it does and if it doesn't?
I think what an amazing resource customers are. They answer questions if they're sincerely asked. I think we get a lot of surveys, like you mentioned earlier, but I find it rare that there is really authentic asking of customers, how could we make this better? What could we do to serve you? What's missing out there? And the more that we can get that kind of authentic feedback from customers, the more it will guide us on where we need to go. And sometimes they're going to tell us things we don't want to hear, but we still have to listen and grow from that.
I can't do that. It would change my plan.
Exactly. Right, right. Or you know, we've got our 7-year plan here. Really? Who can truly anticipate what technology in the marketplace and the world and all of that's going to be in 7 years? I want to know what you're doing now to keep pace with the changes, to keep ahead of the curve as best you can. So you're not on the bleeding edge, but you're on the leading edge of what's happening.
And you can keep it, sustain it.
Exactly.
So Scott, the ultimate customer experience, 5 steps everyone must know to excite your customers, engage your colleagues, and enjoy your work. Give us a little flyover of this.
First, this is a very different book for me for 2 reasons. Number one is the publisher, our good friend Jonathan Merck, came to me and he said, the books that you have written are for upper management. They are for business owners or upper business leaders. Create a book that they would give, not only get something out of themselves, but they would also give to the front line. And I had not done that before.
And then I know.
And then another friend of mine said, your books are too doggone big. Create one thought and have an airplane read on what. And he's sitting across the table from me right now.
It's so good because it's sometimes you want to digest something and take action on it very quickly. And I love all of your books. All of them are filled with ideas. I just usually have to read them slowly because there's so much in them.
Well, thank you.
And I'm a fast reader. Yeah. I read a book all the time.
You're the fastest reader I know. Yeah.
But I don't read your books that way because if I did, I would lose out. This book is one I can read, digest it, and read again and make subtle changes. So I do think it was a good idea.
Well, the other thing is I can't talk about listen to people and input unless I'm willing to do it. You know, imagine that, walk your talk.
Listen to everybody, but I'm not listening.
But I'm not listening. No, and what you said really, really struck me, and that is really the cornerstone of this book. But the other thing is what I hear from my clients is, and it's not a criticism, it's an observation, is that some of the things that older generations came into the workforce and knew, and we took for granted you would know that when you enter the workforce, now we're finding young people just don't know it. They haven't learned it through school or through home or whatever. And again, I'm not saying that to be, oh, these young people don't want to work. You don't know what you don't know.
And by the way, they know a whole bunch of things we have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. So part of what I wrote in this book, and when I was writing it, I'm thinking that is so obvious, but then I've gotten such great feedback on, is things like taking personal responsibility for what happens. You know, the customer is your responsibility. And it might be that there's somebody else in the organization that can answer that question, but you don't make it the customer's responsibility to get to that other person. You take them there either, you know, you could do that online. You can do that on phone.
So
you can introduce them on the phone. Whatever it takes, you take that personal responsibility. You own that customer's experience. Well, to me, that seems so natural, but I found out for today's audience, that's one that they hadn't considered. Doesn't mean they're bad. Doesn't mean it means that we have to be, as leaders, instructing that. And the other thing is, how many leaders have we seen recently that want to blame everybody else and not take personal responsibility themselves? When Nokia went down the tubes and Microsoft bought them in basically a fire sale, the CEO of Nokia said, "We did nothing wrong." Really? You took a company that's valued here and took it to here. Oh, and you did everything right. No, you did. But to me, that was emblematic of leaders who will not take personal responsibility for what happens on the job.
I love that. And it's not just the CEO, right? It's that frontline person who you said you're the CEO of that experience.
Yes.
I love that because leadership is not just top, it's everywhere. And I think about some restaurants I go into, Scott, and you're sitting there and you're waiting. And the server comes by. Did nobody take your order? Did she not? You know, come on. And then did the kitchen not deliver your food? Like, it's always somebody else's.
Yep.
Oh, did they not? There's always a they and a that. And it's just awful versus, you know, I'm trying to blame everybody else. Just take responsibility. I'm going to make sure that you have the best experience you could possibly have here.
And it's interesting because regardless of the size of the organization, we're structured vertically. You know, we have an accounting department, we have a sales department, we have a service department, we have our departments. But customers experience this horizontally. And the customer really doesn't care if that's part of the salesperson's job or part of the service person's job, or if the bill is wrong, it's the accounting person's response. We look at it holistically as a customer. It is the XYZ company that failed me. Well, until we get people to view it holistically, we're never going to deliver the ultimate customer experience to
those who need. That's golden, Scott. Horizontally, that is perfect. I'm going to use that. Okay. I'm going to quote you again. In this book, there's so many stories. I love your ability to tell stories. We just heard you speak. It's amazing. If you have not heard Scott speak, you should. And you should hire Scott, unless you're competing with me. But I, but I do think that, you know, of all the stories in here, just one that randomly is popping into mind later in the book was your experience with Hertz in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
And first of all, did you really just turn your keys over to a random guy, like without realizing he's an employee or not?
What I did
tell the story.
Well, it's, so my wife and I are in Hawaii. We had rented a car from Hertz, but we had done it at the hotel location, not at the airport location. And the person with Hertz was, you know, was fantastic. At that same hotel, we had had trouble with the person at the front desk. They were very
rude.
They were not into serving guests. They were extracting.
Was the first copy of this book to that person?
It should have been. I never thought about that. I should have. Yeah. There's one going to Maui as we're done here, I'm telling you. The contrast was really interesting in that at the Hertz counter in that hotel, that representative was so great when we got the car. And at the front desk of that same hotel, because I've traveled so much, I'm at a higher level of the program, and I had the little sticker that would let me in to get free breakfast. And I forgot my key in the room, and I went to the desk to get another, and she handed me the other, and it didn't have the sticker on it that let me in. And I said, I've got, and she said, no, you don't. I said, well, yeah, if you'll look it up. She said, I don't think you're at that status. And finally, I went back up to the room. I got it, and I showed her the sticker, and she said, well, I don't know how you got that. It was a mess. Okay, so we get our car back not realizing, because we had a red-eye flight. So we take our car back, then we're going to get a taxi to the airport. So we take our car back to the Hertz rental, and not realizing it closed.
It's closed
6 o'clock. And it said, if you're turning in afterwards, you know, fill out your paperwork and then give your keys to a bellman. Which I said, are you the person that, that was another nice one. The Hertz calls me later and says, where's our car? So then I call the hotel, and I can tell by the voice, it's this woman, behind the front desk.
My friend
behind the front desk. It didn't know how I got the sticker. And I said, I gave the keys to a bell captain. She said, no, you didn't. I said, well, how do you know? She said, because at that hour, we have no bell captains working. We just have bellmen. How am I supposed to know the nomenclature for, the luggage assistants? Anyway, so, okay, I gave it to a bellman, and what had happened was he had taken the keys and parked the car someplace else and then didn't tell Hertz. So naturally they're calling me because they can't find the car.
You got a month long bill.
And fortunately for me, the wonderful person at Hertz tracked it down, did everything, called me saying, I'm still looking for it, stayed in touch, and then called me and explained what had happened. And then said, and by the way, I've wiped out this charge. This isn't your fault. And we want you to stay a great Hertz customer. So Hertz came through where the hotel did not. And guess which one I'm loyal to? You know, my wife and I went back to Maui, but we didn't stay at that hotel. So they got great property and they're fine without our business. But how many times does that have to happen before the cumulative effect is difficult for the hotel? And the other thing is, would you want to work with that woman at the front desk?
No.
See, it drives away.
It drives away
your best employees.
The only thing worse, Scott, is if you go to check in with your lovely wife at a new hotel and you find out she's changed hotels and is welcoming you.
Exactly.
I got you.
Now I'm at.
And I have a sticker for you.
Exactly.
Scott, you step back and you think about leaders. What kind of characteristics would you say leaders that are driving differentiation, driving excellent customer service have? What are some things that pop in your mind?
The first one that popped in my mind when you said that, Skip, is empathy. They have empathy for their teams. They have empathy for the customer. Now, it's not sympathy, right? It's not being over, but they can put themselves in the shoes of the customer or put themselves in the shoes of the team member. It's understanding what's happening and what's going on, and then being willing to adjust or to create policies, procedures, and specific frontline activities that relate to that. I think the second thing is vision. They have the ability to see where this is supposed to go. And through that vision, they can inspire and lead not only their team, but their customers to see what the possibilities are of this. You know, there's some technologies that we used as early adopters that we were willing to go, you know, this is like the first iPhone. You could kind of go, you know, this is kind of clunky, but this is really going to be something special, right? The vision became shared with the customer base so that you could see where this was going. It's an overused example, but it's one that's in many of our pockets, and that's why we need to think about how do we share the vision, not only of where we are, but who we are and where we mutually want to go is one of the real qualities of leadership.
So good, and you talk about that with the phone. I saw someone yesterday, and she had a beautiful tattoo, and it had a phone and a pineapple thing going on, and I'm looking at it yesterday, and I said, you know, you realize that nobody today will know that it was a phone with a cord. Like, oh, what that even means.
Yeah.
There's not much about the phone that's a phone anymore.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah. We've got to find the term for it. I said the other day, I was speaking to an audience, and I was reminding them of something I said. And I started to say, I don't mean to sound like a broken record. And all of a sudden, it popped in my head. Most of this audience has no idea what that means. I'm sounding like a buffering stream.
Yes. You know, yes.
They got that, but they didn't get broken record.
It is too funny. So landscape of differentiation and all this new technology and now AI and everything, yeah. How, as that starts to evolve, do you keep to those principles as an organization that have set you know, distinct and differentiation when everything's changing so fast?
I think that tools change and times change, but value shouldn't. We hear so much about AI right now, but in a very brief period of time, we will look at it merely as being a tool, unless the robots take over, which we're all hoping doesn't happen. But in all seriousness, AI is a fabulous, fabulous tool, but that's all it is. It's an incredibly advanced tool, but it's like other revolutions in technology that we've seen in the past that we went, oh my goodness, this is so overwhelming. And then it just became part of our daily lives. And it's hard to look at it that way right now because it is a tsunami of change. But okay, so the way we do things in some ways are going to change, but in other ways, our values should stay the same. But part of the challenge I see for many organizations is they haven't delineated those values. They think their team and their customers are going to get it by osmosis. I have to compliment you. One of the things I pointed out to you when we came in the building here in Columbus was I see a lot of organizations that will have integrity as one of our values. Okay. But one of the things that you did was to say, and integrity is, and there were three bullet points. So defining what those values are and then demonstrating, it's the two Ds. It's define it and demonstrate it. Define what those values are precisely, and then leadership had better be demonstrating that in all that they do, so that's how they get it. It's the old poem, they'd rather see a sermon than hear one. And the message that we're delivering by how we're demonstrating the values is just as important as displaying.
So good. I want to end the podcast with both of us giving one piece of advice to business leaders who want to go on that path and create distinction and create ultimate customer service experiences. What one piece of advice would you give to a business leader who aspires to that?
Talk to your customer. Ask the customer what's
missing. We're going to see which answer is better.
So oh, yeah, I'm sure yours will be. But I mean, it's astonishing to me how few organizations really go in depth with understanding customer needs and what's missing, where you could be of higher, greater service to them. Yeah, as you mentioned, we'll do surveys. Here's 25 questions. It'll take you 3 minutes, 5 minutes, and half the people, at least half the people, quit or delete it, you know, because it's just so. But that involves, I'm talking about having conversations. I'm talking about, I worked for a mutual fund company a while back, and part of what I suggested is go to your five top clients, if you're a financial advisor, and ask them this question. When you refer me, what do you say? And what we found was that for a significant percentage of advisors, what they were hearing back was not what they thought their brand was, which in turn meant they were missing opportunities. They didn't know. You got to find that out and then build that and grow that on your advantages.
Well, that's a good one, but I do have one better.
Good.
Which is read this book, The Ultimate Customer Experience.
Yours is better. I agree.
Because it's all in here. And I think that it is designed for people to drive change and do those differentiation points, but it's designed for everyone. And you can use it in your life. I like it's not just, oh, I'm, you know, a sales rep here or a customer. It's really, you can do everything, right? You want to go on a date? Give an ultimate customer experience. Yeah. It will totally change and rock your world. So anyway, Scott, thank you so much for coming in. Great. We hope that you write another book and we don't scare you off in the future because we need it. It's a great reminder. So thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Aim Higher with Skip Pritchard. Check out skippritchard.com for more episodes, interviews, book reviews, and leadership insights. Until next time, remember, don't settle for the mediocre, always aim higher.